those things, I think we have to look at them, but BRT certainly gives you the biggest early return on investment, and I think that's interesting.
Suggestion pricing, I mean, is it more if you move faster? I mean, does it read your iPass and then charge you more?
Fast you go. It's based on what they want to do is that you want to have 1,600 vehicles in that lane per hour. So what happens is through the ITS, and Paul said something like this earlier, when you're monitoring how much traffic is in that actual lane, so when and you're holding it at 1,600, so the price fluctuates based on the number of vehicles in that lane.
It would actually be almost the opposite. So as the traffic moves more freely, you'd have a lower price to encourage traffic to go in. As it begins to slow down, in theory, you'd have a higher price to keep.
But you know the minute you pull in what your rate is going to be, or do they not know until they finish?
You know, before you get into that lane.
So when I pull in, there's a board that tells me it's going to be a buck and a quarter, and then when I finish.
And you bought that for the whole stretch. It doesn't change on you as you go in. Okay. When you enter it, that's what you're in for until the end.
I think there was state police input on that. The faster you go, the higher the rate.
Yeah.
So we're trying to keep that down.
Right.
I mean, the quicker the traffic moves.
Right.
And those areas where they have congestion pricing, they're seeing travel time reliability, those travel times moving at 45 miles or above about 99% of the time. So it's been pretty successful getting people to move
right.
through.
Because when we had that presentation, it showed that it does also benefit the non, the regular lanes then go up about 20% too, it seems like,
right.
travel time.
And a lot of that is because there's a transit element that provides, that takes more people. So there's an incentive to get in with somebody else. So instead of having 1.1 people per vehicle, maybe get that up a little bit more and you get some people riding a bus. And now you've got a reason to ride a bus because you're not stuck in the traffic or riding some form of traffic because you're not stuck with everybody else looking at traffic. So you're getting that enhanced mobility and reliability.
If we're going to move in that direction, though, at least in the suburbs, you have to look at massive parking lots where we enter the tollway so that people can get from home to the bus lane, which is a whole other land acquisition and cost.
And that's part of the discussion that we will be having with the communities of with the complementary.
I know there's something near Milwaukee, they're doing a lot of those now. They're widening those
park and ride.
Yeah. Park and ride, yeah.
What part of I-55 are they talking about building this?
355 all the way in.
Sorry.
No, I-55 with the bus.
From 355 all the way out.
From Bolingbrook.
All the way
out. Yeah, from 355 down south. All the way into to the merge, to 9094, I believe.
No, not all the way. I think it's about 3 miles out.
They're going
to
do
it. It doesn't go to Lakeshore Drive, yeah, because once you start interfacing with all of the interchanges down there, just prior to that I-94 interchange.
Yeah, so
Bridgeport.
The people who have to ride in from the suburbs and get on something else 3 miles away from town, it's not, they'll never do it.
They just walk.
They'll never do it. Get them to ride a bus from Bolingbrook is going to be tough enough, and if they got to get
one of the things about that particular corridor, and I don't want to, you know, speak too out of school about it, but is that there is existing service generally in that corridor. So there is existing ridership, and this will make their ride faster.
Right.
Basically versus, you know, establishing brand new, versus establishing brand new, never seen before service.
And there's the other things that they found out, there's a bunch of people who live in Plainfield who work at the hospital in Cicero. I can't even tell you what the hospital is, but there's a connection there.
It's a VA hospital.
Is that the VA hospital in Cicero? There's a connection. We do know on I-90 too, there's about 4,000 people a day who are on the buses on paid system today.
If you live in the spirit of U.S. economy and Wall Street, et cetera, they've bought private tollways. They've never bought a metro system private, has never bought a bus system because they don't make money. If they made money, believe me, Wall Street or a hedge fund would have put together the group to buy it. And that's
they're in it for a profit.
Yeah, exactly. and that's going to be the problem, I think, because where is this going to come from?
Mm-hmm. Those projects that were successful got a big chunk of money from a lump sum. It's basically, you look through the study, that's you need a lump sum from a source.
Uncle Sam or somebody else. This is good stuff, though, for what we have to do as you go down the road.
Thank you very much, Rocco.
They're going to put a jogging lane in from Rockford.
Yeah, I was asked about that.
The jogging lane?
One up for Joaquin, one up for me, and one for Carl. We'll just run.
Is the planning council, is there a representation from Rockford? The planning council?
Yeah, I was just talking with actually Joe Vanderwerf yesterday. Our man,
we'll have to finalize it, and we'll get back to you on who all's representative. We're going to want to include communities from all along the border.
Yeah, that's important. They all buy in.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's just quickly have a motion and approve the minutes from January 27th. Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Director Wessner is going to report on the Oasis work.
Sure. You have before you the product of the Oasis Working Group over the last several months. There is an executive summary in there, so I'm not going to get too make an executive summary here particularly, except to say that I do believe the process was helpful in really learning a lot about what's transpired since we went the public-private partnership route, or 3P route, and one thing we learned is that a lot of other people followed us. That in some cases they didn't follow us precisely, and in some cases I think they had some good innovations themselves that we should be mindful of. As you know, the 7-Eleven will be moving into operations of the convenience store fueling stations before very long. We see that as a positive development, and once they're in, I think it's going to be incumbent upon us to be really looking at the future of the Oasis together as the public-private partnership it is. I think we have to keep in mind that many things have changed over the decades, but in fact there's similar services to those provided at the Oasis now very near or on almost every interchange. So it's not quite the same thing that the Oasis were there and truly were an Oasis where it was about the only way where you could go to get some of those services early on. That is no longer the case. So as we work with our partners going forward, I think what we have to do is be mindful of two things. Their interest in making a profit is kind of critical for that element of the partnership if we want the private sector involved. And then I think secondly, though, clearly our interest in terms of making sure that optimal services are available to tollway users going forward. And I think we're probably at the threshold here of having some very substantive discussions with our partners going forward to achieve that. So I guess we're a work in progress, and I think we look forward to being able to make some inroads in the future months here. So if anybody has any questions now or later, feel free to ask and we'll try to get you an answer.
I really appreciate this. As you know, the state senator who has an overwhelming interest in this lives near me. And I think this is the kind of paper, almost like a position paper, white paper, that really went in detail and gives me a lot more comfort and something that I will be pleased to share with people in my area. But I think we're on the right course, and I know this is the one that I had, the committee I had was walk in the park compared to this, and you and your group did a really good job of kind of digging in, finding answers, and getting us on the right course. I really appreciate it, because this was, when we were appointed the board, this was one of the hot buttons that day when they were grilling us up in the State of Illinois building. I think you've done really good work here, you and the committee.
Well, thank you. I do want to acknowledge our committee, Director Tanum, who's been involved throughout, Director Rolfe, and Director Prater, who have been involved in part of the process as well, and our staff folks, Greg Stuckel, Ed Flores, Robert Lane, Joel McGinnis, Michael Puschelnik, Leslie Savickas, and Andrew Borat, who's no longer with us but was very helpful while he was. And we also had a lot of capable assistance from Angela Laporte, Trinise Artis, and Mr. Beaumont. So we thank you all.
So thank you very much. We appreciate all the directors' cooperation on this. And as Director Wessner points out, this is really the beginning of a discussion about how do we go forward. And I think as we reconstitute the way the committees are structured, board, one of the things we're going to want to do is have the committees address the question of how we optimally relate to the Oasis partners. So thank you very much. I just had two additional things, both of which are calendar points. Rocco mentioned the Earth Day Summit, believe it or not, it's been a year. Earth Day this year is actually Good Friday, so we're not going to use Earth Day, but rather the 19th of April. And I ask you all, please, to put on your calendars the 19th of April. Trinity has helped me to organize this year. Having the Earth Day Summit, I've sent a letter to all the chairs of the other agencies, and actually Christy has pulled together the directors of the other agencies. Christy and I went to a presentation of AECOM a month ago, and one of the things that we talked about is this I-90 and the complication of getting all of the pieces of it put together in a way that really is forward-looking, and what Rocco's presentation demonstrated to us is there are a lot of complicated questions. So we thought it would make sense to try to use the Earth Day Summit to get people to start thinking about a specific project rather than just coming together and say, isn't it great that we can all cooperate and work together? And we've made an initial overture to everybody to talk about that. It's something I think everybody has an investment in, and it begins to mirror what CMAP is suggesting that we do. So we'd like to take that opportunity on the 19th of April to begin to have some really thoughtful discussion about this and to try to bring the directors of all of the various transportation and transit agencies together to have a sort of a starting place to define what the problems are and how we can think about going forward.
Did you say April 19th?
I just think it's enormously exciting, and I'm very appreciative because Christy and that you're going to end up carrying the burden of this, but I think it's a wonderful way to begin, and it's not an immediate project that's going to give us instantaneous gratification, but it is going to give us the gratification, I hope, of how these agencies can work together.
There was certainly enthusiasm, I think, in that initial meeting of the various executive directors and CMAP on doing a complete kind of corridor planning from not only the Jane Addams portion of that, but also IDOT's portion that takes us all the way downtown, and thinking about that, you know, construction point as you narrow down from the Jane Addams and you know, go through our last toll booth on that system and what is a construction point and has been a bottleneck. You know, IDOT would be at the table too to think again creatively and long term. So I think it's going to be an exciting.
So that's the 19th, and
yep.
Where is
downtown?
That?
Downtown. We're going back to Sparta, which is where it was last year. Now, I, of course, wanted to go to the next step and get these fly-by links where you go over the spaghetti bowl and keep going out to Stevenson, but he's persuaded me to take a chunk of time. So
I think we should just call the Jetsons and get this.
Yeah,
well, hovercraft. Right.
So that's one stage that I'd like you to keep in mind. The other is we are, if it's suitable for the directors and convened, we'd like to move our June board meeting up to the 30th. Rather than the 23rd, where it normally would be, reference to love and marriage, because Christy is getting married, and we want to give her an opportunity to recuperate.
She delayed it last year.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So we can't let her do that.
So, Trinity's will be just checking with people and make sure that we can do this, but I wanted to flag it.
June 30th.
June 30th. Okay.
Okay.
So what is currently
scheduled
for the 23rd? That's my understanding.
Can
okay.
We just agree to that now, or do we need to?
Well, I'd like
there needs to be a vote in the next meeting, so we'll
have
to put
have
it on the agenda.
Okay, thank you. Christy.
Great, thank you. We have one more presentation, and I'll let Shauna go up and kind of tee it up while I give the rest of the updates, because I know we're pinched a little bit on time. I wanted to update you quickly. I think as some of you may remember, many of you may remember, we had committed to putting our violation images online. So people who are violators are going to be able to go online and view the image of their car violating or the license plate number associated with the violation.
Or somebody have used their car and violated.
Whatever the case may be, many, many different scenarios. Joe Kambich has been leading what is innovative effort new effort to actually test the system before we put it, make it live. And we are continuing to work out some capacity issues. We want to make sure that many people can sign on at the same time without things crashing or being a problem. So we originally thought we were going to be able to do that in the first quarter of the year. It may push a little bit into the second quarter, but just wanted to put that on your mind. We don't think it'll be a big concern. We want to make sure it's working before we make it, put it live, and just want to make sure the capacity is there.
Can you send out a note in like the newsletter we do, just letting people know that it's probably going to be the second quarter? Because we kind of made a big deal about trying to do it in the first quarter.
As we push in, we're hoping still to get it done in March. I just wanted to give you an update. So before March is ended, we'll give people a better sense. We may be able still to make it in the first quarter, but we'll definitely update people if we can. Again, I thought the testing was important. I appreciate that we're trying to meet that first quarter deadline, and I didn't want you to be surprised.
Well, we still are.
And we still have some time. So that's good. Shauna is going to give an overview of education and timeline on our electronic tolling strategy. When I started, I think one of the most pressing concerns, it sounded like from the directors, was, you know, our electronic tolling system, the integrity of it, and ultimately we have had one vendor in place for some time, and, you know, what the future vision for the system might be. We've been doing some work, and as new staff have come on and new expertise has come on, it's allowed us to, I think, really refine a strategy going forward of how we can maintain really a leadership position that the tollway has had in this area. You know, 10 years ago, the tollway really, or almost 10 years ago, the tollway really was in the forefront of electronic tolling and ultimately open road tolling. As you know, we have the largest open road system. I think that it's important for us to maintain that forward-looking posture and really think about what the next 10 years of our system and our needs are going to be, and try to develop and think about and plan for systems to accommodate those needs now versus as they're happening in that 10-year period. So Sean has been doing a great deal of work on this. We have a presentation that I think gives a better sense, hopefully, of a timeline of key strategic decision points and procurements and strategic decisions that we're going to have to make. I'd really like to tap into what I think is the broad experience of our directors as we think through, you know, key business decisions, you know, key strategic decisions of how we're positioning our agency going forward. And I'm hoping that this presentation can provide some opportunity for real dialogue. I know we are a little pinched for time, but real dialogue with all of you about how we can best engage you and your expertise as we think through what our next system looks like, what some of the business rules and how our processes and procedures maybe need to be revised or updated going forward. And again, really giving you all an opportunity to provide some input and allowing us the opportunity to tap into your expertise. So without further ado, Shauna, let's get started. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Christy. Good afternoon, Director. I'm very pleased to be back with you today to talk through our electronic tolling strategy. This builds on a lot of discussions over the past month, and as well as on the work of the customer service working group. So we're really excited to start getting to a place where we can move forward with this. We want to start by revisiting and formally documenting our main goal, developing more flexible, responsive, and effective systems. I mean, as you know today, because a lot of you come to us from time to time with requests for reports and information that we really struggle to put together, that sometimes we can't really give you the perfect information on, because our systems isn't any of these things really right now. It's not that flexible, it's not super responsive, and it's not very effective. It was a great idea when we first started open road tolling. It was one of the better things out there, and we made all the right decisions at the time, but technology has kind of passed us by at this point, and this is our opportunity to revisit. So our goals are to find a system and put into place a system that works better for us, that actually will allow us to continue growing, allow us to continue evolving with the tolling industry. The first one there talks about a system that will actually encompass better business rules. Right now, even the best system out there wouldn't really work all that well for business rules we have in place, because they're complex. They've grown up as we've learned different things, and we've just simply kind of accumulated them. So we need a system built on better business rules, and we need to play a key role in making those business rules. I'll talk a little bit more about that later. One that provides enhanced transparency and accountability back to the reporting example that I gave you earlier. We need a system that allows us to better monitor what's going on, to better report and analyze the things that we need to understand, so we can identify problems and opportunities faster. The next one there talks about a reduction in system response times and breaks. In terms of response times, over the past number of years, several years, the time it takes to move from screen to screen in the system is taking longer and longer because it's not a system that was necessarily built for the volume of transactions that we're asking it there at this point. So that's one item. And then breaking down, it actually does break down a little bit. We have all sorts of system errors, and they're not getting better. At best, they're plateauing. And we keep a long list of system breaks that we have, and then we work every single day with our vendors to fix them. That's not a typical scenario for a major organization with a massive piece of technology. So it's indicative of, the need to move forward. Enhanced flexibility to accommodate change. Tolling industry is changing, it's evolving every single day, and our current system doesn't really allow us much leeway to change and move with it. It kind of sticks us where we are, which, as Christy pointed out, we have a large open road tolling system. We're in a pretty good place, but that won't be the same forever. So, it's one thing to say you have goals, but then we also have to take responsibility as a group to make the decisions that move us forward. So, as part of putting a new system into place, we anticipate a number of important decisions that we will all have to make, and we've put some of them up here just to give you a sense. One there would be scalability for transponder-based and video-based tolling. When we're looking for new systems, new technologies, we need to understand how scalable they are for both types of tolling, because our current traffic volumes and patterns won't necessarily be the same forever, and we need a system to accommodate them as they evolve. IPAS accounts, including household-based and plate-based. Right now, our system, our IPAS, the IPAS part of our system, is pretty much built on the concept of a household account. People have an address, they list their license plates, they have, you know, one or more transponders associated with that account. It's kind of a household account. A lot of tollways, not a lot maybe, that's overstating it, but some tollways are starting to experiment some degree of success with plate-based accounts, which makes it easier to do things like video-based tolling because you can find and match up in a faster way with a plate than you can when you're trying to go to the household.
And can you explain quickly video-based tolling versus transponder, just so people are clear on that distinction?
So we do both in a way. We have people go through transponders and we feed their transponders. If a transponder doesn't read because it's placed in the wrong place, they forgot to put it in their car, the battery went dead before we thought that it should, we take pictures of everybody's plate, and that's the video-based tolling, because we'll review those images and we'll try to find that person and actually hit their account through a video toll, or actually through a violation if they don't have an account.
How many video tolls do you have annually?
I can get back to you with the exact number. I'm afraid if I state it here and I'm incorrect, it'll go into some record, but it's a fair amount.
We'll do it with a
fair
practice.
Number. Because you know that Bridgeway contract?
46 million images ultimately going to them annually,
right.
which results in some form of either video tolling, an IPAS account, or, you know, recognition and pursuit. I think, I don't want to misstate the number either, but...
I know.
it could be as high as 10%.
Yeah, I think I remember...
At one of our committee meetings, there was some talk about 5 or 6 million or something
right.
like that. But
it's in the customer service report.
Yeah.
So we
right. We'll get back to you.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a great question, though. And some systems, like in Denver, they're trying to do all video tolling. They're not using transponders. They're taking pictures of the plates. They're on the cusp of trying to figure out how to get this done, but if they figure it out and it works really well, it may very well be an example of the type of evolution that the industry is going to have to absorb.
Yeah, it'd be interesting because of the number of plates that exist, you know, not only from a video perspective. I mean, it's a couple hundred, 250, as I recall.
Well, that was the problem with Indiana, is they actually had two different kinds of plates with the same numbers, which then the whole system went haywire. So, and that's just from one state.
We also, when we're going through an evaluation of what kind of technology we'll need in the future, another set of decisions we'll want to make has to do around the system's capacity to handle different pricing scenarios. So the flat type of rates that we have now, but also discounts, and also even the possibility of congestion pricing. Not so much that we'll have to make that decision just to purchase a system, but because we want a system with the flexibility that might allow for those sorts of decisions in the future. Because right now we're a little hemmed in. And this would just, you know, provide a better platform.
Well, the reality is, which we've learned unfortunately, is just to bid this is going to be about a 2.5-year process. So it's going to be a 5 to 7 year marriage, whether we like it or not. And clearly by the end of that period, there's going to be congestion pricing and various things that will become the standard in the industry, and hopefully we'll be doing something like that here. So we have to have that capacity in our bidding process.
We're going to get to that timeline. Well, you've teed it up well. The second to last one there, we would want to make decisions around a system that would have flexibility about how we handle violations, including how we bundle them. We bundle them in these 2-year increments right now. The processing time limits, we've talked about the 90-day rule off and on as a group. Those sorts of things are sorts of things we would want to do in the new system and try to compare it against others. Then finally, capacity for an increase in traffic. If there's one thing we've learned from our current system, it's that you really need to plan for volume because we are a big system. And our current one wasn't really built So that brings us to something that looks like a map, a roadmap, a timeline. This timeline, you can see at the top, it's to Director Morris's point, there are multiple years on it. Because purchasing a new system like this is not like getting Microsoft Office and loading it on to a series of computers. This is a giant business decision, and it requires a lot of very formal, very thorough, well-thought-out steps. So I want to talk you through each of these items. I don't think we'll have the time to go through all the back pages, but if you want to think ahead as we talk through each one, feel free, because for each of these lines here, there is a page that gives a little more detail about what the key activities would be and how that would unfold. So the first line there, talks about exploring new technology and national best practices with an RFI. The idea here is that a lot has happened in the industry since we chose our system and put it into place, and a lot continues to happen. And we should educate ourselves as a very first step before we go all out and try to redefine how we do business and buy a new system. So this is something that would probably take the better part of this year. It's something we can do in-house, and it would involve not only written responses from vendors of all types, but probably a series of vendor meetings and vendor demonstrations. The next two items there.
Just so people understand, it's request for information. I know not everybody
knows the point. Request for information. If someone who's not very good at
so it's not a formal proposal we're asking people for. We're asking them to just talk to them about the possibilities.
Yeah, that's very helpful context. Thank you.
And I think it's actually a really nice, transparent, open way for us to have, you know, conversations with potential vendors or people who are, you know, idea leaders, innovators in this sector, particularly, frankly, with procurement reform and some of the conversations that people are concerned about. Do I, you know, preclude myself from bidding ultimately if I give you some idea? This is a very open and transparent way for us to get some of that information. And I would say one thing that I've been thinking about and wanted to open up to for your input either now or at some point later is, you know, maybe there this would be maybe a good opportunity for directors also to participate in a learning process. This isn't a formal RFP process, so there wouldn't be procurement decisions made, but it's an opportunity for all of us to learn.
Well, actually, what we learned in the committee we had, if you'll recall, you all gave us permission to start the bidding process about a year ago, and we are finishing it right now, having stayed on course. About 4 months into it, our committee discovered that we didn't have enough knowledge to really bid it, and we were really going to only have one probably real bidder, which was our existing contract. And when Christy came on board, we kind of put the brakes on with the permission of the board, and to get to that, because in order to have more than one vendor and serious vendor to bid, we have to go through this process. And unfortunately, it means that this contract will extend about another year, year and a half or two, but we kind of have no choice to understand it. We were the innovators, and then we've stood in the court, we've dribbled the ball, and now we got to get back in the game. And I like the approach, because with the new procurement rule, we just don't want to take any risk of people getting in trouble trying to talk to either preclude a vendor or have board members have to disqualify themselves.
One thing that is nice about doing an RFI is it allows us to kind of put into parallel a couple of major activities, because at the same time that we're doing that, we want to start redefining our business rules. Our business rules, like I said, are complex and not all that well documented. They exist in a series of kind of older manuals, a series of memos and emails. Some aren't really documented at all. And we think that there is going to be huge value in formally going through a process where we identify them, document them, make some decisions about how we want to do things in the future. Because if we build a system on the exact set of business rules, kind of like building a house on the sand, this is going to be a way to lay a really great foundation. If those first two, redefining business rules and documenting new business rules, you notice there's little blue stars inside. And that's to indicate that we don't think we can do this alone. We anticipate needing the services of a consulting organization that does this sort of thing day in and day out, that has the skill set and, quite frankly, a team of people with all the hands necessary to really do this and go through the deliberate process. You'll see those blue stars indicate where we think one contract, one entity can help us with those sets of activities, and then that yellow star indicates kind of a second contract, second organization.
And this would be in addition to just assistance level contracts, in addition to whatever ultimately the procurement was for the new system, or if there are multiple different procurements that make up a new or expanded system or the next iteration of the system. But we wanted to give you some sense that we would be coming back to you with some strategic procurements to help us in this area.
The other nice thing about doing this along with the RFI is as we're learning more about what exists in the marketplace, as we're learning more about what other tollways are doing, we would be able to actually use some of that to inform our business rule documentation and kind of future visioning. From that, we would also kind of parallel track the development of RFPs. Today, RFPs is plural because it's quite likely we would have more than one. Right now, we have one contractor doing absolutely everything from soup to nuts, including the implementation piece and the maintenance piece and the lane piece and the back office piece. That was, again, a pretty decent decision considering we were the first big system to go to open road tolling. Makes a little less sense right now. It's not that common to do that when you're undertaking a major technology change. So we would develop the RFPs using these new business rules at the core of those RFPs, where we're describing the future world that we want, and we're listing all the requirements in a detailed and prioritized way. And then we would go right into procurements and testing, and we say the testing piece, because these procurements would be big deal procurements. They would need to follow technology selection methodology that's pretty typical of major system selection, and that would involve more than just written responses in some vendor meetings. It would involve full demonstrations and demos, based on demonstration scripts and all of that stuff. That would then take us into actually transitioning to new contracts and implementing new systems, where that yellow star would indicate the need for external assistance, because we believe that a system integrator would be a key aspect of that sort of work.
This is something that we think was a key piece that was missing potentially in the first attempt at implementing a system, and that is some pretty critical expertise to bring, and I think a standard practice to have not only the provider of the new system, but also a professional integrator that can help you make sure that there's some type of seamless transition. And you see here that, you know, in addition to that, we've got the TRUMP contract renewals are really our existing contract, where we may have to, you know, as we're integrating and as we're transitioning, continue to, although maybe at a lesser level or a lower level, we may have to continue this contract, you know, out into additional years so that there is as seamless a transition as possible.
Well, we do need a legal opinion, though, because I think at some point we can't technically renew again.
We have a while. We have multiple renewals.
Well, but...
available.
I read it as 5 years, and this is 5 or 6 years total, and this would take us to 7 if we go all the way.
Let's,
we can
just
need to
look
at that.
There are provisions for, you know, the sole economically feasible source, and of course we don't want to use those. We'll want to expedite as much as possible and move things along as much as possible, but I also want to give you a realistic picture of what it takes to transition a, you know, multi-million data, you know, images and other, you know, huge system that has this amount of data and is this important. 80% of our revenue comes from electronic tolling, so obviously critical to us and growing, frankly, every year. So I wanted to be realistic in the timeline.
So Chris, you just spoke to the contract renewal of what we call TRUMP, that's the existing system. And right below there are the establishing new customer service contracts, because we will have to do that this year, and you'll hear from us again on that soon.
You've already done two of those, right?
One. We did Bridgeway.
Well, we did Bridgeway, and then we, you know, because of the bids that we got, we opted to re-up for another year with the existing contractor, but we'll be making some other, you know, trying to move on some additional procurements there.
And then finally, that long line along the bottom just says continual improvements, because I think it's very important. If you look on page 13, it lists the things that we talked about together last month as examples. There's no reason to stop improving whatever we can, even as all of this is going on. So we will continue to do that. We will not halt those efforts, but we do want to start moving forward to the future vision rather than kind of remaining on the plateau.
And at some point, we'll make a strategic decision about whether it's worth it for us to continue to pay for improvements to our existing system. You know, it'll depend on the cost benefit of those improvements, or whether we just say, you know, we have what we have now. We're going to move forward with something else. So
I know that I'm out of time, but I really appreciate your.
Well, the rest of the slides back up this in.
Yes, they do. So for each of these green bars, there's slides behind it. To describe what
the activities were doing. So, thank you. This is very reassuring, and we appreciate that it is based on the foundation of the work that the customer service work group had done, and the great step forward to be able to put this together. And Shannon, thank you for stepping in and picking up as the acting director of business systems and all the work you've done up to date.
And I think one of the things that came up during our committee, I think Chair Wolf had some people contact her, and I think Director Banks. In some states, they have that little tiny, it's almost like a business card transponder. So in this whole process of looking at technology, I'm assuming we'll look at those kind of things.
We'll certainly be looking, you know, we are part of the IAG, which is this, you know, multi-state group for interoperability, and that group is going through a procurement process now for, you know, what is the either next generation of the transponder technology that we use. We would certainly, I think, flexibility, we kept saying flexibility at the beginning of this, because you're absolutely right. Even as a member of the IAG, you know, can we develop a system that is flexible enough that not only can read this whatever transponders or technology we agree on as part of that group, but, you know, whatever the next version of that is, sticker tags are one of those, you know, one potential. Video tolling of just going with a license plate image is another. There are lots of different kind of mixes and iterations. So you're right. We want to be as flexible and scalable as possible, I think, in this next system.
Anything else from your report?
No.
Okay, thank you. And as you know, the federal regulation and state regulation issue report we'll do at the next meeting. That's not time sensitive at all. We have another slot for public comment. I have no indication there's anybody who would like to make a public comment. So if, with your permission, I'd like to move to the consent agenda. And the first on the information technology, I just want to remind you that that number is now $67,184.33. May I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That's approved. Item two will be on the next month's agenda, procurement. We can take both of those together. May I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Operations on collective bargaining.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And hallelujah. And on 5-4 on engineering, the first one, there will be a recusal by Director Towns. May I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you. That's been approved. The second one, there's a recusal by Director Rolfe. And the third one, there's a recusal by Director Rolfe. So we can take those two together.
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you. And then we can take 4-7. May I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? 8, there's a recusal by Director Rolfe. Motion?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you. And then we can take 9 through 12.
So moved.
All
second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Do we have a second on that? I'm sorry, I cut some deal. Okay. And on legal, I think we can take all 6 of these together.
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, thank you very much. That was very efficient. Is there any unfinished business? Any new business? Then we will adjourn to regular session, go into executive session, we'll get some lunch, and then we'll come back in 7 minutes, and then we'll be out of here by 2 o'clock. So, motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn and move to executive session.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Tom, could you tell us what we're doing?
Yes. We'll